IRS criminal investigation is the only law enforcement agency that is tasked with investigating and recommending for prosecution criminal tax violations of the Internal Revenue Code. We know how to follow the money, whether it be a tax investigation or a money laundering investigation. And essentially, over the years, we have become known as the world's finest financial investigators.
You're listening to Matt Lyne, the special agent in charge of the Charlotte Field Office of the Internal Revenue Service Criminal Investigation. Welcome to the Fraud Fighter Podcast.
At the end of the day, we're trying to drive compliance with the tax system through deterring people from trying to cheat the system.
In this episode, we discuss the role of IRS criminal investigation in tax compliance, the criteria of a good criminal investigation, what are the best characteristics of a criminal investigator, a typical day of an IRS criminal investigator, and the various specialized duties available to IRS special agents. He is the special agent in charge of the Charlotte Field Office with the Internal Revenue Service Criminal Investigations. Matt Lyne, welcome to the Fraud Fighter Podcast.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me, Robert.
That's my pleasure, Matt. Completely my pleasure. You work for the IRS Criminal Investigations. How did you decide to join IRS?
I guess my interest in law enforcement started when I was real young. Growing up and always knowing that I wanted to get into law enforcement, didn't really know what I wanted to do. I ended up going to college. I was taking some criminal justice classes, but also was taking some business classes. One of the business classes I was taking was a financial investigative class, actually taught by a special agent with IRS criminal investigation. And I just absolutely fell in love with that type of work, kind of the mix between business, accounting, and law enforcement, and really took an interest to there. So at that point, kind of an interesting side note here or add on to the story is that I had an uncle who was, I knew was a federal agent, and I had always assumed that he was an FBI agent, never really, didn't know exactly what he did. And I was talking to him about this one day, and lo and behold, he is an IRS CI special agent as well.
So you had a family member you didn't even know was an IRS agent?
I knew he was a federal agent, but did not know it was a special agent with IRS criminal investigation. And from there, you know, I learned as much as I could from him through this class and really just kind of fell in love with this type of work and pursued a career in this fashion.
Most people don't know that the IRS has a criminal investigation side of it, a law enforcement side to that. Why is IRS CI, CI being criminal investigation, why is IRS CI so important in society? Why do they exist?
Obviously, the Internal Revenue Service monitor and manage the tax system for the U.S. And the vast majority, large portion of the IRS is civil in nature, assisting taxpayers, assessing taxes, collecting taxes and revenue, helping to put out policy and those types of things. A very, very small unit within IRS is the Criminal Investigation Division. And it is a law enforcement function within IRS. Currently, we're probably around 3,000 employees between special agents and professional staff within IRS. And we have a very important mission within IRS, but I think more broadly, not just within IRS, within federal law enforcement. IRS criminal investigation is the only law enforcement agency that is tasked with investigating and recommending for prosecution criminal tax violations of the Internal Revenue Code. So individuals who willingly and knowingly cheat the tax system, evade taxes, file for, you know, for false refunds, use the tax system for their own advantage, not just as a mistake, but are intentionally violating the law, trying to get away with something. We are the only law enforcement agency that can look at recommending those individuals for prosecution of criminal violation. On a larger scale, IRS criminal investigators, we deal with financial crimes through our investigations of tax violations. We also look at other financial crimes such as money laundering, Bank Secrecy Act violations. And essentially, over the years, we have become known as the world's finest financial investigators. We know how to follow the money, whether it be a tax investigation or a money laundering investigation, are often sought out by U.S. Attorney's Office, other law enforcement agencies to look at the financial components of criminal activities. You know, I learned a long time ago, you know, crimes are committed for two different reasons. You've got crimes that are committed, crimes of passion and crimes of greed. And when it comes to crimes of greed, there's money, following that money, helping to show where that money came in, where that money went out, who benefited. That's where we come in. In terms of investigating individuals that are doing that to evade taxes, to evade the tax system, we are the ones that look at that from a criminal standpoint. In terms of breaking down and assisting to follow those finances in complex financial crimes, we're also called upon within the federal law enforcement community to do that as well.
Your agents have to know about taxes, and therefore they have to know about accounting. Is some type of prerequisite or qualifications that are needed in order to even start or apply to become a special agent?
So the basic qualifications for our special agents are it's a four-year degree and then 9 hours of general business classes and 15 hours of accounting credit hours. And again, it's to give them a basic understanding and familiarity and comfort level in dealing with accounting, dealing with the flow of money, business structures, kind of the language in the world of business, really the flow of transactions and those types of things. Most of our agents have a very, very good understanding of the business and the financial transactions and flow of money through those types of things. But we also have people that come from all different backgrounds. We've got some individuals that come from public accounting, come with a CPA, a certified public accountants. We've also got people that come from the law enforcement arena. And more recently, we have people coming in with cyber training and background with those types of things. So again, our investigators, we take and we utilize the strength of the employees coming in. We do need to make sure that our special agents have a basic understanding of that accounting, of taxes, the flow of money. Then from there, they'll use their experience. But we also rely on other experts in some of the more technical areas of tax law and those types of things to assist us as we conduct our investigations.
Once an individual applies, goes through the screening process, and is hired, what kind of training does it take to become a special agent?
Upon being hired, our agents attend approximately 6 months of training down at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. It's a training center down in Brunswick, Georgia, and it's a training center that trains a very large portion, I believe it's the largest portion of federal law enforcement agencies in the country. Our agents will go down and they'll attend approximately a 10-week course in basic criminal investigations, criminal investigator training program. There, they'll sit in classes and go through a class with all the other special agents and law enforcement agencies that go through the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. It's where they teach you how to become a cop. Basic investigations, basic law, firearms, defensive tactics, arrest techniques, search and seizure methods and practices, those types of things. After graduating from that 10-week program, we move on to a 15-week add-on training for IRS specific. And you're going to learn during those 15-week additional skills, build on some of the skills that you've already learned in that initial program. But really, that's where you're going to get into learning how to conduct financial investigations. It's just an IRS course taught by IRS special agents and really kind of walks you through the life cycle of cases, how to conduct financial criminal investigations, criminal tax investigations, and what's available out there. So that's the formalized training that our special agents receive before they report to the field. When they come out, they'll be assigned an on-the-job instructor, and they'll work closely with that on-the-job instructor who's a seasoned special agent. They'll begin working through real cases and gain some of that real-world experience.
So an agent goes through the screening process, goes through the academy for approximately 6 months, comes out, gets assigned an instructor to help guide them through the real-life applications of what they learn in training. What type of cases do they work on?
When they come out of training, or quite frankly, any of our agents, we're assigned different cases. We get cases through various means, whether it be from the U.S. Attorney's Office or from another agency, or a lot of times we'll receive referrals from within the IRS. You'll have civil examiners, revenue agents, revenue officers may identify fraud and identify potential criminal activity when they're dealing with taxpayers that they may refer over to us. Once we get those cases, we evaluate them and we assign them to our agents. They'll begin to further evaluate those cases to identify whether or not there's any indications of potential criminal violations that fall within our jurisdiction and really help IRS and criminal investigation to meet its mission. The types of cases that our agents work, as I mentioned, tax evasion, false statements on tax returns, any sort of violations of the Internal Revenue Code are really going to be the key cases that we're going to be looking at. So we're looking for those folks that are taking steps to try to avoid detection, avoid assessment of taxes, avoid the tax laws and having to pay their fair share. We see that from whether it be evasion of income tax with individuals and evasion of personal income tax. We also see businesses, you know, failing to uphold and follow through with their employment tax obligations where they won't withhold or pay over employment taxes, those type of things.
How many cases does an average agent keep on his inventory? Is he working like 1,000 cases per year? Is it 2? Is it 5? Is he expected to be like a detective out there who may have like 15 breaking and enterings at any given time? What's the caseload like for an agent?
The caseload really varies. It varies from agent to agent, depending on their experience, depending on really the type of cases and a lot of other factors. But generally speaking, our agents will carry anywhere between 2 and maybe 4 cases at a time. And those are cases that they're actively involved in, going out there, conducting investigations, still trying to determine whether a crime was committed and or they've determined a crime was committed. They're trying to gather the additional evidence to make a formal prosecution recommendation. Outside of those, they'll typically be kind of looking at a couple of other allegations, trying to build those cases that may be coming down the road. And then typically they're also working on the back end. They'll have cases that have been referred to the Department of Justice, Tax Division, and the United States Attorney's Offices for prosecution. So they may be preparing, working closely with the U.S. Attorney's Office to prepare for an indictment, to accept a plea, prepare for trial or sentencing. We see those cases all the way through the end. So they may have some cases kind of on the front end and the back end, but typically 2, maybe 3 or 4 active full-blown cases.
How long would it take to work a case like this?
That's another thing. It really depends on the complexity of the case. It depends on just the various factors. Each case kind of stands on its own. That being said, if you kind of look at the average life cycle of our cases, they typically take about 18 months from start to finish on average. That's also taking into account we've got some cases that are very complex, potentially trying to gather evidence from other countries, from all different places in the United States, trying to piece together those financial records. Those cases may take a little bit longer. We also have some cases where if the records are available much quicker, if we've got more cooperation or maybe a less complex case, it may take much less than 18 months. But I would say 18 months is about the average life cycle of one of our cases from the time we open it up to the time that we're sending a complete package with all the evidence that we've gathered over to the United States Attorney's Office recommending prosecution.
Based upon the nature of an investigation, it's financial related, and an agent will have to go through the bank statements and find where the money came from, where it went to, and do some interviews of individuals. But what other techniques or tools are out there that they use in order to find the evidence and get enough evidence to bring it to court for a prosecution?
Financial records documentation is critical in these cases, whether it be bank records, you know, us obtaining records from financial institutions, We issue summons and subpoenas, which are legal processes to those institutions. You'd mentioned bank records, but really any sort of financial records. If it's, you know, purchasing a house, we would want the documents related to the mortgage and the closing of the house and the sale of the house. If we're talking purchasing a car, we would want all the sales records related to purchasing the vehicle, those types of things. Financial records as a whole is a large piece of what it is that we look at. Interviewing people, you had mentioned that as well. That is something that is very important with what we do. We have to be able to go out and talk to people and gain testimony from them. What happened? Get the facts. Find out, really try to piece together what it is that they know and that they have information on. Other ways that we collect evidence is through execution of search warrants. If we have probable cause that a crime has been committed and there's evidence of that crime, we can put together an affidavit and work with the United States Attorney's Office and submit that to the court. And if the court agrees, they can issue search warrants and we can execute search warrants to gather evidence. Other types of evidence, we conduct undercover activities. We'll utilize undercover agents or confidential informants to engage individuals that are involved in illegal activities to try to see what comments or what statements they may make to our undercover agents or confidential informants. So those are some of the techniques that we may use. There's really just a wide variety of techniques and tools that are out there for us to gather all of the evidence and all of the information that may help us kind of piece this case together. A lot of it's documents, a lot of it's testimony, and more we're seeing a lot of it is coming in from the technology side of things, whether it be computer forensics or information coming in from these information technology centers, emails, email accounts, those types of things. It's all gathered in the same sort of fashion through legal process, subpoenas, summons, search warrants, and it's just additional evidence that we have to kind of comb through to start to piece together what happened.
You know, mentioned the different types of cases out there. I can imagine as a special agent, you get phone calls from bankers, spouses that are ticked off because their other spouse is cheating on them, or even from the local prosecutor's office. What makes a great case that says, wow, we need to do this versus, this ain't very good?
You are absolutely right. We receive information and tips, if you will, and allegations that come to us all the time. And we're constantly trying to look through those and identify which ones there's really some substance to and something that it really there's a need for a criminal investigation to be opened up. Some of the things that we look for is not just an allegation, but if somebody has specific details, what actually occurred, something to give some additional credibility to that allegation on the front end. Those are some things that we really look for. If attorney's office comes to us or business partners or those types of things, typically those are people that have intimate knowledge of what happened. So any sort of documents that they have to help support the allegation, those are types of things that really strengthen that initial sales pitch, if you will, of, hey, look, there's something going on here. We think that the government should look into this.
Is there more to it, like the dollar amount's important, or not only just the source of the information, but like the notoriety? If you talk about Joe Blow, the plumber next door versus the mayor, does that sway one way or the other? Or is it something that at least is part of the equation, but not the whole equation?
That's a good way of putting it. It is part of the equation. There's a lot of things that we weigh as we're looking to look at and open up investigations. As I mentioned, you know, the credibility of the allegation is one thing, but we'll also look at those factors. You'd mentioned the notoriety of the individual. If it is somebody that's well-known in the community, it could make a much bigger difference as we're trying to gain publicity and really try to deter others from doing this type of activity. If prosecution is ultimately sought and moved forward, yeah, those are things that we look at, as well as the dollar amount. You had mentioned that in the federal system there. Some of the things that we end up looking at are the loss amounts, you know, how much tax loss there is, how much loss there is related to the fraud or the money laundering does come into play. Those are things we definitely do look at. If it's a small amount, one check, a few thousand dollars, I realize that that is a lot of money to some individuals and it can really have harmed them. But a lot of times, unless there's a larger scheme there, it may be something that we have to pass off to either the local police or over to our civil side for them to try to take some sort of civil remedy. So the dollar amounts, the notoriety, those types of factors do come into play as we're evaluating cases.
And I'm assuming it's different for every region. Charlotte, North Carolina is going to have a different problem than El Paso, Texas, or New York City.
Yes, no, you're absolutely correct. It will vary from place to place, again, depending on the community. And at the end of the day, we're trying to drive compliance with the tax system through deterring people from trying to cheat the system. And that deterrence comes from us successfully prosecuting those individuals who willfully violate the law, the tax laws, laundering money, BSA violations, and prosecuting those individuals, getting publicity on it so that the honest taxpayers out there sees and says, hey, look, you know, these people are being held accountable. And those people on the fence look and say, hey, look, oh, I might go to jail like this individual. I better not do this.
During your career, you rose to the rank of special agent in charge. What exactly is special agent in charge?
In my current position, I'm the special agent in charge over the Charlotte field office. So IRS Criminal Investigation currently has 21 different field offices across the United States, the Charlotte field office being one of them. We oversee criminal tax enforcement in the states of North Carolina, South Carolina, and Tennessee. As a special agent in charge, I'm responsible for all of our personnel within those states, along with ensuring that we're properly evaluating, investigating those cases, and to ensure that we are balancing our cases to ensure that we're touching on various program areas and that we're driving compliance throughout all three of those states as far as criminal tax enforcement and CI is concerned. So as a special agent in charge, I oversee all of the operations within those three states. And we have 21 or 20 other special agents in charge that do the same thing for their various regions.
How many agents would or support staff would a special agent in charge or SAC supervise? We're talking about 500, 200?
So the Charlotte field office comprised of approximately 105 to 110 special agents, supervisory special agents, and professional staff, both administrative and investigative professional staff. We have about 75 to 80 special agents between the three states. And then the remaining 30 or so staff are between management, investigative, and administrative support personnel.
So you go from Wilmington, North Carolina, all the way to Memphis, and from Raleigh all the way down to Charleston.
That is correct.
That's a lot of space. What is the typical day like for an IRS special agent? Do they show up to an office? Do they work at home? Are they always in the cubicle, in the courtroom? What's a typical day like?
A lot of the time, there's not too many days that are exactly alike. It's very much driven by the cases and the investigations that an agent has. So we do have offices or posts of duties throughout those three states, and individuals or an agent will typically come in and work in those offices. But at the end of the day, investigations are worked in the field. As I had mentioned before, going out, collecting evidence, meeting with our partners, conducting witness interviews, preparing for trial, those types of things. And so one day an agent might be in the office inputting bank records into the computer and analyzing those records or looking through search warrant records. The next day, they may be out in the field conducting interviews. The next day, they may be either assisting another agent with an enforcement action, whether it be a search warrant or arrest or undercover activity, or they may be conducting it on their own. Many times, our employees spend a lot of time over with our partners, the attorneys of the United States Attorney's Office, our partner agencies with various federal agencies, FBI, DEA, U.S. Postal Inspection Service, HSI, you name it. We work with all of them. And remember, there's a financial component. So really, every day can be a little bit different. But it's all driven based on the work that you have as an agent. Again, there may be times if you're nearing the end of an investigation and we're compiling a report where you do spend a large amount of your time in the office as you're trying to compile the evidence and put a report together to summarize the investigation. You may spend a little bit more time in the office at that point. If you're early on an investigation or the investigation calls for it, you may be out days and days and days at a time conducting interviews, talking to witnesses, serving subpoenas, those types of things. So it really depends.
We were talking about training and the type of investigations that that the IRS special agents do, especially with there's cybercrime out there. You guys carry weapons. You have the powers of arrest you talked about. You also have cell phones that need to be imaged. Did every agent get training like that, or is it something that you have special teams that do that type of stuff?
We consider to be collateral duties or collateral assignments, which is additional training in certain techniques or certain specialized areas that need some additional training. You hit on one of them. One of the areas would be our computer investigative specialists, and they're special agents who have an experience in working financial investigations, but they go through basically computer forensic training, additional computer forensic training. So they know how to image different computers or cell phones or tablets or other computer devices. They know how to take that information off of those devices, how to use different software to pull out the important information, whether they be documents, whether it be text messages or photos or videos or email information, those types of things that people use and criminals use computers to communicate with, to store information on. Those specialists learn how to extract that information from the computer devices themselves. We have other collateral assignments. I had mentioned earlier that we conduct undercover activities. So we have agents that learn to become undercover agents, and they go through additional training to become an undercover agent and to successfully be able to conduct those types of activities. We have tech agents who know how to use recording devices and utilize enhanced different sounds from devices or videos and store information that we capture that way. We also have collateral assignments where we have use of force instructors, those individuals that are proficient with firearms and they learn how to teach others how to shoot, how to utilize firearms, how to properly go through our use of force techniques and those types of things. So there's really a wide variety of collateral assignments out there within IRS criminal investigation to teach certain individuals or those individuals that are interested in those specialty areas how to do what they need to do to benefit all of CI and to teach others within CI.
When you started as a special agent and you have now rose up to the rank of special agent in charge, tell me about a case that you're most proud of or something that made a difference in your career.
Over 20 years in my career, there's been a lot of cases that I've either personally investigated, been a party to as far as assisting others with an investigation, or really over the last 12 years or so, managing and overseeing those investigations. I don't know that there's one in particular that really sticks out and says, you know what, this has been a game changer. But there is something that's been very consistent with all of them. And I learned this very, very early on that I'm very much drawn to those cases where we're able to help others. One of the first cases, kind of my first few years of cases that I ended up working, it was work with HHS, which is Health and Human Services Office of Inspector General, and they were working a fraud case. It's a durable medical equipment fraud scheme case where individuals were essentially billing Medicare for services that weren't needed. But in this case, what they found is if they gave some of this medical equipment, in this case, they were motorized scooters and motorized wheelchairs, to individuals, they could bill Medicare and get a significant amount of money for this equipment, and it cost them very little. So there was a huge profit margin for them on that. But the reality is these individuals did not need that equipment at all.
And they sold scooters that were not needed?
It was not needed. And as we went out there and we talked to medical professionals and we talked to these individuals, I mean, these guys are using these scooters and these chairs and those types of things. The doctors were saying they need to walk. They need to keep the blood flowing. I mean, they do not need these types of things. And so in the end, that case was really individuals that were trying to take advantage for greed. They wanted more money and they don't care who they hurt. And so I've always been drawn to those cases where, you know, we're able to stop somebody from victimizing somebody else. So we see it in a lot of our cases, whether they be fraud cases. We see a lot of elder fraud abuse cases where individuals go and they'll take advantage of the elderly or other people that are disadvantaged in an effort to try to make a buck. We see that a lot with refund fraud cases where you'll have return preparers or other individuals that will try to take advantage of people that don't know the system to gain bigger refunds, and then they will take that bigger part of the refund. It's for personal gain. So I've always been drawn to those types of cases where we can really make a difference for those true victims and try to bring some justice to those that attempted to fraud them.
What makes a good agent, in your opinion? We talked about you hire as an agency a diverse group. It could be people from different backgrounds, and you have to work all these investigations. What makes a good agent, in your opinion?
A good agent needs to be versatile. They need to have strong technical skills, but on the same token, they really need to be able to judge their own strengths and weaknesses and know when to get help or to find somebody that may be more technically sound in that area. Teamwork is so important. We don't work any case by ourselves. Through the entire process, when we conduct interviews, we have partners with us. Even if when we wrap our cases up and we send them to the United States Attorney's Office, there's attorneys that have to move that case towards prosecution. So there's always a team. So a good agent is going to be somebody that can work in a team environment that works well with other people and, again, knows how to balance and recognize that self-recognition of their strengths and their areas for opportunity and really rely on working together as a team to try to move things forward. They have to be motivated as well. They have to be excited, motivated, willing to work hard. There's a lot of work that goes into our investigations, a lot of long hours, weekends, nights. They have to be flexible. And those are just some of the core basic qualifications that really kind of help set a solid foundation for a successful agent, successful career.
Looking back in your career so far of almost 20 years, what do you wish you had known before you became a special agent? When you first went to training, what do you wish you had known now?
That is a really good question. What do I wish that I knew then that I know now? I think looking back at my career with IRS in particular, one of the things that I wish that I would have known earlier, I guess embraced earlier, is Robert, you got me stumped on this.
I'll rephrase the question. If you had to stand in front of a bunch of new recruits, what one piece of advice would you give them that you wish you knew at the time they're sitting there?
So one of the things that I try to tell all of our new recruits, and it's something that was instilled in me, early on, but even though it's instilled in you, sometimes you don't realize that it makes that much of a difference. It's a matter of reputation, building a solid reputation, making sure that everything that you do, you've got people throughout this whole organization and this law enforcement community that they look to you. And so continue to work hard, make sure that networking, you're making those connections that you need to, that you're following through on the things that you say that you're going to do. And really building that solid reputation as somebody that can get things done, that's dependable, and that knows what they're doing as they're kind of going through. So looking back at my career, As I said, that was instilled in me very early on. But, you know, if I go back the last 5 or 10 years, you can really see how that has made, and that really makes such a big difference to those that we work with and those, whether they be peers or they be other partners, and really how valuable that reputation is and the importance of building that.
That is so true. You can really screw up your reputation really quick, especially you're not fully honest about the weaknesses of your case. You kind of hide the ball, and then find out later on that the ball has been found, and then you look embarrassed because, and I'm saying you or me, but the reputation is very important because it gets around really quick whether or not you're a good agent or a bad agent, not only with the prosecutors, with your peers as well, but defense attorneys. They should be able to look at you and say, yeah, this is going to be a good case because I know this guy and he's been doing it. He did a great case, you know, the last couple of times I've been with this guy. But yeah, reputation does go a long way. It really does. Absolutely. It can be screwed up too, because once you get blackballed in law enforcement, if prosecutors don't trust you, well, good luck. You really don't have much of a career if prosecutors don't trust you. Because they'll get around the office, don't trust this guy. It's not that he's doing anything illegal or unethical. He just won't maybe show up on time, or he won't tell you the good, bad, and the ugly. No lawyer wants to be embarrassed in court. That's for sure.
No, absolutely. Reputation, it takes a long time to build a solid reputation, but you can lose it really quickly.
Yep, you sure can. Looking back on your career, what was the biggest mistake or lost opportunity?
One of the things that I do look back at is I had the opportunity to spend 3 years in Puerto Rico with IRS, and it was a fantastic group of newer agents at the time, and really that was kind of a transition for that office down there. And so a lot of great work, a lot of great people. I spoke Spanish a little bit going down there, and I tried to speak Spanish with my coworkers down there and learn Spanish. One of my regrets is that I did not capitalize on that opportunity and become bilingual or fluent in Spanish from those 3 years that I was down there. Enough to get by, and it comes back to me a little bit, but I believe that was an opportunity that I missed to really embrace that second language.
So the government sent the manager down to Puerto Rico who didn't speak much Spanish?
Well, I was not a manager at the time. I was an agent at the time. I spoke enough Spanish to get myself into trouble, probably on the front end. I learned enough to conduct investigations and work closely with my peers down there. I'm not bilingual. That is an opportunity I missed to really strengthen that foreign language skill.
Ready for the final four questions?
Sure.
You are now a SAC. You're in charge of over 100 people approximately in your field office. What is your biggest motivation now?
My biggest motivation now is trying to help those people around me, whether they be employees within my field office, managers that I have, helping them to develop, helping new agents to develop, helping our partners, making sure that we are able to help and benefit one another. But at the end of the day, it really comes down, I enjoy coming to work every day because I feel like I can make a difference and I can help other people in different ways, whether it be strengthen their skills as a special agent, strengthen their leadership skills, just trying to help make a difference, make things easier on them. But helping others is what motivates me.
What book or books have changed your life or thinking?
One of the books has been Stephen Covey's book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. That was an eye-opening book, and I've taken a lot from that self-reflection and try to really focus on me and my self-development and kind of my perspective of things. That has been a very good book. From a leadership standpoint, another book that I recently finished was What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And that's been another kind of very introspective book that just kind of helps you to self-evaluate and look forward. So those are two books that have made a difference on me.
Share something that you have purchased in the last 12 months, less than $100, that you enjoyed or made your job easier. If it's good enough for Matt Lyon, it's good enough for the world. What is that?
Over the last year or so, have really started getting into audiobooks. And so I've got an audiobook subscription. to listen to either while I'm working or spend a lot of time on the road listening to books. And so that has been something I've really enjoyed over the last year or so. Probably one of those things that I wish that I would have learned about a long time ago, because I've really enjoyed being able to get those books on tape like that.
What kind of genre are you listening to? Is it fiction? Is it nonfiction? Is it leadership? What is it?
Right now, a lot of it's focused on leadership. A lot of them are leadership books that I've been listening to. Leadership, self-improvement books, helping others, those types of things.
If you had to do something else, if they said, turn in your badge and gun today, you're done, what would you be doing?
If I had to move on and do something else right now, I think there's a lot of things that I'd be interested in doing. I think I've got a lot of skills out there that would translate into other careers. But I'll tell you what I would really like to do is, again, I'd like to get into coaching others, whether it be leadership coaching, leadership development. That's something I've got a passion for. Whether it be that or, again, something else, it has to be driven by that motivation that I shared a little bit ago. And that is, am I helping others? Am I able to help other people along the way?
Well, very good, Matt. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much for your leadership in the field office for IRS criminal investigations, and thank you so much for your service. I do appreciate everything you've done for us.
Well, Robert, thank you very much for having me. This has been fantastic.